This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So did the feminists have it right that the solution for what ails men, the remedy for toxic masculinity, is a combination of apologizing, self-loathing, and transitioning? Nancy Pelosi was on MSNBC over the weekend.
Did she know she was on MSNBC over the weekend?
She did. She offered a clarion call for Democrats. She went full Malcolm X. Democrats, congressional Democrats, are to win by any means necessary. And look, she, you know, there's some resistance to her as a future speaker if the Democrats were to regain the House, because, you know, the socialist base of the party, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez contingent, you know, wants new, younger, more hard left leadership. But Pelosi, she'd be willing to step aside had Hillary Clinton won, but now she's the only woman there to represent womanhood.
I have not asked one person for a vote. I haven't asked a candidate or an incumbent for a vote. What's important, and I know better than anybody how important it is for us to win this election, because I see up close and personal what the Republicans and this president are doing. I do not think our opponents should select the leaders of our party. The Republicans are spending millions, tens of millions of dollars against me because they're afraid of me, because I outraise them in the political arena, because I outsmart them at the negotiating table, and because I'm a woman who is going to be a seat at that table. And that, for me, is very important. If Hillary Clinton had won and had sat at the head of that table, be different.
Yeah, but she didn't, so it's not. For more on this topic, since Nancy Pelosi raised the specter, of course she did, of identity politics, gender identity politics, we're pleased to be joined by a longtime nationally syndicated columnist and author and opinion leader, Mona Charon. She's a columnist and senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's got a new book out that you want to check out, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense. Mona, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So how do you react to what Nancy Pelosi had to say about you know, holding up the banner of womanhood in the wake of Hillary Clinton's defeat?
You know, this is one of the things that turns off so many middle-of-the-road women. You know, they don't want to believe that in order to be pro-woman, you have to be a left-wing Democrat and you have to buy into their agenda. In fact, it is very possible to be pro-woman and to be pro-family, pro-men, without you know, taking issue with the Democratic Party. Look, my book is for everyone who has felt a resistance to feminism because of its alliance with the left, and who has had difficulty explaining it fully. And didn't want to seem like they don't appreciate or love or respect women, but just does not is not buying into the left-wing agenda. This book really fleshes that out and provides the arguments for why feminism went badly wrong for women, for men, and especially for children.
Well, what does it mean to be a feminist in this day and age?
So, you know, but you talk to feminists and they'll say, how can you be anti-feminist? All it means is that we want equal rights and we want equality. And if that were all it meant, it would not be controversial. It would be something that everybody could sign on to, almost everybody, I would suspect. But of course, that's not really in practice what it means. In practice, it means really deep-seated hostility to men. You mentioned toxic masculinity is a term that they've created. It means hostility to marriage, to family life. It means a belief and a ratification and really a celebration of abortion as a feminist issue, as a feminist marquee issue. And so that is far beyond a belief in equality. That is sort of a belief in a permanent war of the sexes. it's a belief that if women are doing well at the expense of men, that that's good. Whereas I think it's a problem. So, for example, look at, because by the way, women are doing great in our society in many ways. Like they're dominating the undergraduate ranks in colleges, and they're dominating, you know, they're coming to dominate the managerial jobs in our economy. And the feminists would say, well, that's wonderful. And I say, well, wait a minute. I mean, women tend to want to marry men who are their equals or superiors in education and income and so forth. Who are all these women going to find to marry? And that's a problem. And so also this idea that women are doing so well is a narrow view, because I don't think women can do well at the expense of men and vice versa. I think men and women need each other. And the data show that the people who are thriving in our society are people who are married and have stable families and have that love and support that everyone needs to go out into the world and be their best and be their most successful. And I'll tell you something else that's really interesting. You look at the data on women's happiness going back to the early 1970s, and you find something very interesting. Despite the success of the women's movement, despite the fact that the feminists have gotten most of what they were after, women are less happy than their mothers were or their grandmothers were at the same stage of life. Women's happiness has steadily declined over the last several decades, just as the feminist movement was in its prime.
Well, Feministing.com founder Jessica Valente, she had the answer a few weeks ago in the New York Times. I know you opined in response to her op-ed, as did some others. And she was, you know, very interested in curing what ails boys. And it's real simple. All you have to do is strip out the masculinity from men, and there you go.
Exactly. And, first of all, the fact that she even noticed that boys are struggling is something of an accomplishment, because the feminists only almost never recognize that boys are in trouble in our society. So fine. But then her solution is that they shouldn't be less masculine. And, you know, that is part of the root of so much of the anger that exists in our society toward between the sexes. It's because feminists have made it their project sort of to denature men, say that men can't be men and still be good people. But of course, thousands of years of civilization belie that. And our own Western civilization has made it the point that you raise boys to use their strength, to use their high energy, even to use their strong sex drive in the service of higher values. So I raised three sons myself, and I can tell you they're a handful, but but you take that natural energy and you say, you are to be a soldier for good. You are to battle for the weak. You are to defend the weak against the strong. And with their sex drive, you know, that is directed toward marriage and caring for a wife and children, and being the one who provides, you know, stability. And so those are the things that a good civilization does. But you don't tell men that they're toxic. You don't tell men that that they're somehow flawed by their very nature. No, you mold their characters. And just similarly, by the way, girls need a lot of molding too.
Yeah.
Guess what? Girls have flaws. Girls, last time I noticed, girls are people and they have flaws.
Yeah, but,
do tell. Preach on.
But it's weird. But I think our boys at this day and age, they're raised being, you know, accused of being guilty instead of being, you know, innocent until proven guilty. That's, you know, they always say, Mom, the gender selection is rapist or feminist instead of male, female.
I know. You're absolutely, and you know, and then they're surprised when there's a backlash, and men become sort of some men become misogynist. You know, it's because they've been beaten down so much. Look, I cite a couple of examples in my book of the best that men are, even though for decades they've been told that they're toxic. Nevertheless, you know, one of the examples is what happened on that French train,
yeah,
when a terrorist came out of the. Right? Six men from different countries, three of them were Americans, proud to say. took him down. You know, they were unarmed, and he was heavily armed, but they went after him because they were going to save all those innocent lives. That is a very strongly courageous and masculine act. And then I'll tell you one other story. The when the Aurora shooter, that awful event in Colorado where a shooter opened up on a theater full of people, four young men covered their girlfriends with their own bodies to protect them. Three died in the effort. That is the sort of thing that men do out of their natures. Their natures are to be protective and to help to help women, protect women. Feminists will never acknowledge the good side of masculinity. And as long as they continue to seed our culture with bitterness and resentment and grievance, we are going to continue to be less happy as a society. Girls need to be raised to curb their gossipy tongues and to be and their group cruelty, which can be terribly painful in adolescence. Boys need to be raised to be gentlemen toward everyone, and to respect and love one another, women and men in their differences.
One other aspect of this that's interesting, and it sort of underscores the schizophrenia of the left, is on the one hand they're saying, you know, men be less masculine, and men in many cases you're irrelevant, we don't even need you. On the other hand, when you see the violence in places like, I don't know, Chicago on the south and west sides of the city, part of that conversation obviously goes to the incidents of fatherless homes where a man is not there to instruct a young man how to be a man. And so all of this proper focus on young black men, 20 to 24, 47% of whom are neither in school or employed in the city of Chicago, highest black unemployment in the country in the city of Chicago. So there's a lot of focus on that cohort. And then at the same time, we're saying, well, we don't need you anyway. So which is it?
Yeah, the story of family disintegration is the story of our time. Whether, you know, whenever you, I go into this in detail in Sex Matters, going back to the Moynihan Report of the 1960s, where Pat Moynihan, a Democrat, pointed out that there were large numbers of fatherless families in the inner cities and what they then used to call the ghettos. And he warned about this as a danger because the family and fathers are the first civilizing and stability-inducing institution in our society, and young men growing up without fathers do tend to have a lot more problems and definitely are much more likely to be involved in the criminal justice system. And he issued this report, and it caused a furor. Everyone said it was racist to even talk about family structure. And so for decades, it became verboten to mention family structure. And then another interesting thing happened, which is that rather than address the fatherlessness problem in the black community, the other parts of America adopted it too. So now white America, Hispanic America, everybody is doing is following similar patterns. And so now more than 50% of new births in America are to unwed mothers. And 50% of children will spend some part of their childhood, it's 40%. It's 40% of new births are to unmarried women, but 50% of American children will spend some time in a single-parent family, either because of lack of marriage, because of divorce, or something else, abandonment. And we know the data are incredibly strong, you know, and this also ties into the problem of inequality in our society, because guess what? The people at the upper end of the economic spectrum, their families are very strong. They are still following the patterns that were derided and as relics of the 1950s. Well, college-educated Americans, after a brief experiment with family dissolution back in the 60s and 70s, have returned to the stable families that were more characteristic of the 1950s. So, people with college degrees, about 85%, you know, get married and stay married, and they raise their children in a married family. Whereas at the lower end of the economic spectrum, marriage is becoming not the norm. And those kids are at a huge disadvantage. And, you know, it's hard for a girl to grow up without a dad in a million ways. She suffers from lack of self-esteem. She doesn't stand up for herself the way girls who are raised with fathers do. Now, these are generalizations. Obviously, some kids do okay, and that's great. But these are generalizations, and the data show. Now, so it's hard for girls. They're more likely to become teenage mothers if they grow up without a dad. But the kids it's hardest on are the boys who grow up without their dads. They don't learn any positive identification with masculinity. They don't learn what it means to be a man. They never see it modeled, how a man is polite and loving toward his wife. And they are, when they grow up, there's an interesting series of studies that was done of boys and girls who grew up in fatherless homes. And the girls did better. In other words, once they reached adulthood, the boys were less likely to be employed than the girls. They were less likely to attend college. It turned out that the boys pay an even higher price for being raised without their dad than the girls do.
She is cultural critic, nationally syndicated columnist, bestselling author, senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Mona Charon. Her new book, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense. Check it out. Mona Charon, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
And she joined us on our